Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones. I'm in Australia and my company is Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is...
I'm Stacey Bell and I am in the US and my company is called Focused Fun.
And I'm Sarah McLaren and I'm in the UK and my company is Separation Anxiety Solutions. So today we're going to talk all about dog sitters, daycare, boarding, how to find them, what to ask them, and all things that you need to know. So it's a bit of a minefield, isn't it, the old dog sitting, daycare, boarding arena?
It really is. It really is.
Before we get started on that, can we say why we might need a doggy daycare, etc.?
That's what I was about to say.
I'm so sorry, Stacey.
Oh my gosh!
How rude of me.
Okay. It's just that daycare can be a really convenient option for managing absences, to making sure that your dog is not alone longer than they can handle. So that's the biggest reason, I think, that, well, and it can be really enriching for some dogs.
Yeah, and with separation anxiety, that's one of the things we really have to have a look at, is how long can the dog be by itself? Mm-hmm. And finding cover for the times that we can't be there.
Exactly. So the kinds of options that we've got, then we've got daycare as an option. Uh-huh. And we've got dog sitters, so the guys who maybe either come round to your house, which for some dogs are a really great option, particularly if they find it difficult being somewhere new, or your dog goes to their house. So not all daycares are in centres, are there? Some are based in people's homes. We've got home boarding, so if you want to go away without your dog, then maybe you could do a bit of home boarding, which again might be easier for a dog with separation anxiety. Certainly easier than kennels.
Well, there's a lot of sites like, is it Borrow My Doggy or Borrow My Dog? I can never remember. Or Rover, or are there other ones like it? I'm sure there are.
Yeah, I found rover.com, and they cover dog sitters, daycare, boarding, house sitting kind of thing.
Right.
And they cover UK and the United States and a few places in Europe.
So they're a central agency, aren't they, where you can go on there and choose what you want, and they've got like maybe a list of different companies that you can use.
It's not even companies. It's just like you just can register with them, right? Like, so just individuals can register with them. And that's, I mean, kind of awesome, but also can be problematic if your dog, because you just don't know who it is, right? Like, so it's, I don't know exactly what the screening process is, but I would definitely screen them yourself. I wouldn't just because they're on Rover or one of those doesn't mean they're a good fit for you.
I had a quick look. So I went on rover.com today and I had a poke at them with a few questions. I thought I'd ask and see how they work. And they have
like a research scientist.
Yeah, I was kind of like poking some poor girly on Rover, going, well, what if you do this? So Stacey says that the kind of, you know, it could be like you or me. You just put your name on there and say I want to be a dog sitter or a boarder, and then depending on what country you're in would depend on what licenses, etc., you need. But the thing that I was just slightly wary of was that Rover rely on the individual to make sure that they've got all the required insurances and things like that. They don't actually require them themselves, because they cover everything under their own guarantee. But they do put you in touch with sitters, etc. So you have got the chance to interview people and ask the questions that you need answering for your particular dog. So it's so you do get a chance to get in touch with people. And I think most of all the ones I looked at seem to work that way, where they put, you know, you basically put your details in, try and find someone in your area, and then you get to ask them lots of questions.
For something like that, you could, you know, you could read the reviews of that particular person.
Exactly.
But how do we know it's not, they've got like 100 friends that have got on there and reviewed them. So again, do your research.
What are some of the questions that people should ask?
Do you know, I found a few things online, like you do, you know, what questions should I ask when I'm getting a trainer, that kind of thing. Only there were some very strange and rather varied questions that they suggest that you ask people who are looking after your dog. One of them was, what would you do if my dog starts scratching and creates a hot spot? Which I found a slightly obscure question.
That's very specific. Very specific.
I thought it was an odd one. So there's a lot of general stuff, but I suppose what we need to think about is what questions are relevant to us with dogs with separation anxiety.
So are we talking about daycare? Are we talking about home daycare at the moment, or daycares in general?
I think for some, whether it's home care or the kind of the bigger places, is that your dog's having a chat, Ness?
They're having a little wrestle, yes.
Wait a minute. Sounds like my husband when he's hungry. So I suppose there's certain questions that you want to ask regardless, aren't there, particularly when it comes to separation anxiety, because you don't want, you know, you want to know whether they crate dogs, whether they have enforced rest times where they put them in a different room or in a crate, and that works for both in-home services and the bigger daycares.
Well, I think the number one question that I would start with is, are you a force-free, fear-free, positive reinforcement? You know, are those the methods that you use there? Because you do, I mean, not all places do, right? Some are going to be using punishment-based methods, and you don't want that for your pup. I think that's a good one to lead with, because if they're using punishment-based methods, nothing else matters, right? It's just like, okay, thanks, boo-boy. So that's the one I would lead with. And then, yeah, I had that on my list too, Sarah, is, you know, the rest time. Because a lot of places do, especially if you're doing a full day daycare, they'll have some rest time. And so if they say, yeah, we put them in a crate or a run or something like that, then I think it's your chance to ask, how can you accommodate my dog who wouldn't be okay with that?
I think it's really important to tour the facilities, whether it's home style care or a daycare facility. Have a look at, transparency is so important. So if they can't be transparent about their facilities and the way they operate, then I'd run a mile. Yeah, and that would include perhaps webcam, video, photos, all that sort of stuff. But starting with a tour of where your dog is going to be, so you've got a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you feel there's in any way that they're being a little bit cagey about something, or a bit avoiding a question, then, yeah, I don't think that's transparency at all. And, yeah, you probably have to maybe do some investigating.
To follow along with your camera option or comment, a lot of times they have cameras where the dogs play, but not where they rest, which I feel like is a really big problem for separation anxiety dogs, because that's where they're going to struggle, in the rest area where they're separate from people, right? So what are some accommodations that daycares or in-home daycares might use? And that's just, you know, a lot of them, if your dog is well-behaved, they might let your dog hang out with the office staff during that time, you know, while they're at their computers doing stuff.
Yeah, look, I had a client who took her dog to doggy daycare, and it was, it enjoyed going there, so it wasn't an issue for the dog, and usually had a good time. And I can't remember if she had to change daycares or what happened, but anyway, her dog came back from doggy daycare, and it was just a bit of a mess. It just wasn't itself, and she knew there was something up. And she rang them up and said, you know, what happened, or, you know, has anything happened? And they said, oh, no, we didn't crate your dog. No. And basically it had been in a crate. The lady she spoke to eventually kind of came clean and said, oh, yeah, we put her in the crate for a few hours or whatever it was.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
she was not happy.
Yeah.
And it affected the dog, so.
That's part of the problem, isn't it? Is, you know, when you're trusting people to look after your dog, particularly when you are trying to put information across to daycares or sitters that your dog has a genuine problem. This is not just an owner problem. This is a problem that, you know, can affect the dog and the family.
Honestly, you know, they don't understand. They honestly don't. And even if they're trainers, half of them don't understand as well. So they're just going to go, oh, she's just being silly or paranoid or, you know, acting over the top, and they're just going to do what they want anyway.
Well, a lot of times if you can ask them if they've had dogs with separation anxiety and what accommodations do you make for them, and kind of leave it open for them to answer, and that will be, I think, really telling to what their experience has been and what level they're kind of in tuned with the dog's needs.
Yeah,
definitely. It's asking the right question, isn't it? Because if you say to them, you know, my dog's got separation anxiety, do you crate them? They're going to go, oh, no, we don't do that. Or some will. I mean, you know, just to get the business, some will say, no, we don't do that. And then before you know it, you've got your dog in a crate. So, yeah, asking the right question makes a big difference. And I think that's a great question, Stacey.
I think we should just clarify to the listeners that we're not anti-crates, but as we've said on numerous occasions, many dogs with separation anxiety don't do well in crates and have confinement phobia, and so therefore a crate is just not appropriate for these dogs.
Well, and plus in this circumstance, they would be in a crate in a new place alone, so it would be extra. Other some more general questions that I would ask is just, you know, how the play groups are decided, like how they group dogs together, how many dogs are in the group, and that's a big one depending on your dog's preferred social environment. You know, some dogs love the kind of controlled chaos feeling, and other dogs can't handle that, right? And it's kind of like, I think of, you know, if you think of it as different environments, like maybe doggy daycare is like a nightclub and being home out on your sofa is like a spa, right? And so like that's a huge difference. And so for some dogs, daycare's not even really a viable option, even if they don't have additional struggles like dog reactivity or something like that. But like some dogs just genuinely don't thrive in that kind of environment.
Yeah, they can find it overwhelming, and then that impacts how they are when they come home, and that ongoing stress can really affect their separation anxiety training. So when we say groups, It could mean size, but it could also mean the way the dogs play together and also their energy. And if they have a great time at doggy daycare, then they're going to be exhausted and tired, but happily so when they get home, as opposed to carrying ongoing stress with them because they had a really bad day.
Right. I have two ways I could go from here, and I'm like, which way should I go? Okay, I'm going to go with the more questions, and that's how many dogs per staff person?
Yeah, staff to dog ratio. Yeah.
That's
important because if you've got one person for 20 dogs,
you can't really watch them, can you?
No. Right.
at that time, at that point, you're not being proactive at all. You're not able to, you know, see the dogs that are being cornered or chased or, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, because some dogs are real bullies, aren't they? And you get like a little scaredy dog, they don't need that. Yeah. And if your staff to dog ratio isn't high enough, you could have so many problems.
Right. Well, and then the other thing is, what type of training does the staff have?
Yes.
I think that's huge. If they're not adept at reading dog body language or how and when to intervene and all of that stuff, I mean, it's a skill.
Without putting the fear of God into people sending their dogs to doggy daycare, there was a case, I think it was before COVID. what?
No, I just laughing at you.
Oh, thanks. Now I need to know why you're laughing at me. There was a case in I won't say what state it was. I will just be very general. There was a case in Australia. Pardon?
That's general.
Yeah, it's pretty general. Yeah, there was a case in Australia, I think it was before COVID, and it was a doggy daycare, and one of the staff actually filmed, I believe it was the owner, hitting a dog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know why, what the circumstances were, but there was a huge frenzy about it because, of course, it got onto social media, and I think it got on the news, yeah, and I don't know if that daycare is still running or not. Yeah, if they've not got training, then they're going to get frustrated with the dogs. And
and not only the management or the owner, but also the staff, right? Because the owner can't
absolutely
be everywhere, right? So the staff and just again making sure that training is positive reinforcement. You know, you're not using aversives, you're not using punishment. So I think that's a important point.
I think another important point is what activities the dogs do during the day. So is it a free-for-all, or are the dogs all just thrown in together and, you know, left to their own devices, or is there some guided activities that the dogs are given to give them some enrichment and mental stimulation to make their day better?
Yeah, there's a doggy daycare near me that does that sort of thing, like has the free-for-all part for sure, but then also some enrichment and some resting type activities. I think that's a more recent thing, at least in my area, to try to balance it out like that.
There's one, I was listening on Clubhouse the other day. I don't know if you guys are on Clubhouse. It's the new social media trendy thing to be on.
I can't even do another thing.
I know. Look, it's a real time sucker. It just gone.
I only need that in my life.
And I just get in the dog rooms. But there was somebody talking about in America, they've got these indoor dog parks, like in old abandoned areas, and they sound great. Full of, this lady was saying, I think her name's Sunny. She went into this one and she took a dog, and it was her first time going there. And she said the dogs were having a great time. There was loads of fun things going on. And she sat down and she just lay on her back for a minute. Next thing, she passed out asleep and she woke up and, you know, her dog was still having a great time. And she just said the atmosphere in this place was amazing.
Yeah, we've got, there's quite a lot of the indoor ones over here as well, where they use old industrial units and things. The only trouble with the indoor ones is they can be quite loud.
Yes.
Because there's nowhere for sound to go. So, of course, because they've got a roof, it does make things quite noisy. Because we've got such crap weather.
Yeah, you have to have it indoors.
If you're not sure if your dog is good with, would be good in a traditional daycare type of setting, what are some things how can we guide owners to trying to figure that one out?
I would maybe suggest they try to find a home facility where there's less dogs, for starters, and maybe just pop them in for an hour or half an hour. And if they'll let you stay there initially, perhaps even just, or, you know, ideally they've got a webcam so you can watch them yourself for the first half hour, or if the facility, if it's, especially if it's a home style one, maybe they'll just, you know, do some sort of live feed. You walk out and you've got a live feed to see how your dog's reacting to that.
Well, I think especially if you have a dog that's hyper attached, which just to review means the dog is not okay as long as he or she is with any human. They have to be with their special one or two humans. So then even a daycare situation is difficult for them, even though they're with people and other dogs and, you know, in this fun environment and all those things. So I think what you said there, Ness, about being able to stay while your dog kind of gets to know this other person is really important. I think that can help a lot of dogs, but especially if your dog is hyper attached to.
Yeah. So obviously with hyper attachment, it's harder if you're a single person and you've got no one to kind of fall back on to look after your dog or to share the love, you know, so you can't really get more people to do more things in its life to teach it to be more independent of you. So even though it might be, you know, it's probably a lot harder for the dog, it's actually quite important to try to find somewhere for them to go where they're comfortable away from you to get them used to not having to spend time with you 24/7.
Hyper attachment is a whole nother episode.
So with hyper attachment, then we've got a whole a slightly different ball game when it comes to trying to find some kind of pet sitting or sort of just something that gives you a break, even if it's only for a couple of hours to go shopping, perhaps.
It is a lot different. And another thing to kind of try to get to the bottom of when you're looking for a place to leave your dog, right, is like, how is the staff always the same, or is it changing a lot? Because, you know, the trick with hyper attached dogs is to help them form a relationship with whoever they'll be staying with, right? So if it's always different staff in the daycare, then that's going to be a harder sell for your dog. But if, like Ness was saying, you're doing a home-based daycare, then that would be easier.
Yeah, I think that's where the home-based guys come into their own there. And I made a little list I've got here of places that you could maybe ask to see if they can recommend people who do, like, home care.
Daycare.
Was things like ask your local shelter or the local animal college or vet college, your local pages on the internet, perhaps, or on Facebook. I wonder Clubhouse. I wonder if there's anyone on there that you know, I mean, so as you know, are you local dog trainers like us, you know, people who deal with dogs, you can always ask them if they know anybody. But find people, I think is it Borrow My Doggy? That's the one that you mentioned, isn't it? It's another one that's based in the UK as well, and they're quite often, because it's often people who just want to take other people's dogs out just because they haven't got a dog and for the love of it. So quite often some of, you know, there's people on there who don't even charge, or, you know, or will. I mean, I had a colleague of mine, her dog had a couple from Borrow My Doggy that used to take him out. And they took him out once or twice a week just because they wanted a dog to take out and they didn't have one. And he loved them. And he wouldn't go with anybody else, but he absolutely loved them.
Yeah, I had a client of mine contacted Mad Paws, which is one of those overarching kind of organisations that have lists of people available in your area. And she lived in a fairly remote area, which is in itself is problematic. So there weren't any daycares there. She was really struggling to find cover for a dog, and she got onto, I think it was Mad Paws. They found this lovely old couple And this dog is same, adores them. And, you know, they've had dogs all their life. Now they're in a unit, they can't have them. So they really, really wanted to still have a connection with dogs. And yeah, and it was kind of like a happily ever after. This dog goes and spends time with them and she feels comfortable with them. My only concern with some of those is if something happens to your dog, like what insurance have they got? I think that's kind of important if something goes wrong. To know what insurance these people have got. Like, I mean, because you could get like the teenager next door sort of thing to look after your dog, but if something bad happens.
Yeah, I suppose in a way you run that risk with everybody though, don't you? I mean, this is the thing when I was looking on the Rover site again, when I asked them about, you know, insurance, they sort of like have their overarching Rover guarantee, as they put it. And I asked them, well, yeah, that's okay, but are the actual dog sitters or dog walkers, do they have their own insurance? And it wasn't, it was kind of like, well, they're covered by our guarantee. So, but I don't think
they I think most of them don't, because here, like a lot of students will do it, or like maybe even like nursing students, I hear that a lot, just trying to make a little extra money.
Yeah, there's actually a group here that does... They are vet nurses, so they're not students. They're proper vet nurses that I don't know if it's just the Gold Coast or the whole of Australia, but yeah, you'd like to think that those, if you were leaving your dog with one of them, that it might, they might be a bit
more prepared.
You know, I'm just wondering what your dogs are doing.
Oh, they're just being silly. They're just wrestling.
Just keep hearing these random rattling noises of dogdom in the background.
The other one is Julie Naismith's Separation Anxiety Network. And that is on
Be Right Back. Mighty
Networks is the base for it, but we can link to it. But that's basically the same type of thing where people are not necessarily having insurance. But the cool thing about this is that the people who register for this all have dogs with separation anxiety, right?
Yeah.
And so it's, if you can find somebody near you, you can provide coverage for each other. And there's no risk. Anybody who's working through separation anxiety knows how important it is not to leave your dog unattended, right? So there's not that risk of, oh, I just thought I'd check and see if it was okay if I ran to the store for 2 hours and, you know, whatever. So that's kind of a cool one.
Yeah, that's another big question for the house sitting people, you know, home sitters, is, you know, are you likely to go out for an hour and leave my dog in your house on its own?
Yeah. There's a good network for that called Trusted House Sitters. .com, I think it's .com, and that one is interesting. It's like you pay, I'm gonna say $150-ish US to be a part of it per year, and then as many times as you want to use it, you use it. But it's not a charge per time. It's like a charge to be a part of the network, and then once you're in the network, you don't pay any money. And I know of some people who have used it when they've had to go away and really like it and just have continued to use the same people. And the people were not necessarily local. Like I have somebody in the UK that uses it, and somebody from the US comes and stays in her house as like part of their vacation and takes care of her dog and like just takes her dog everywhere when they go out. So that's kind of neat. And another neat option.
I knew someone who used to go over to Spain to do it. She'd look after look after someone's dogs over there every year. So for her, it was her holiday. They got to go on their holiday. So that, I mean, that's a really kind of like a nice link up for people, isn't it? Ness, when do you want to go on holiday? You know, me and Stacey will come and watch you do.
Can you handle 3 crazy Malinois?
Oh, no. Between the 2 of us, we might. Yeah.
Of us. We'll just feed them constantly. Just feed them. Food and balls. It's interesting though, isn't it, when you look at all this, just how many companies there are now that are dealing in doggy daycare and sitters and boarding and all this. I mean, it's become a huge business.
It really is. It really is. Now, what do you guys think of just traditional boarding kennels for separation anxiety dogs?
Not really keen.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm not really keen on even for dogs that don't have separation anxiety, to be fair.
I know.
It would not be my, if I had absolute choice about where my dogs went in the long run, that I wouldn't go down that route anymore. I don't think I have done in the past, but I think for a lot of dogs, it's hugely stressful, especially going from a home environment to a kenneled environment, even when they put heaters in and things like that. It must be difficult.
Heaters, air conditioning.
Oh yeah, well, no, heaters are really dark and it's wet.
They probably have to put lights in too because of how it's so dark.
Yeah. To stop them all getting sad, we've all got these big sad lights everywhere. You know,
so I agree. So I think I was trying to think of back to daycares and back to trying to help people decide if their dog would do okay in daycare, and kind of thinking about, like, are dog parks a good test of, or have any predictive value in if your dog does well at a dog park, would they do well at daycare?
Is this the old American job aid dog park that we don't have here?
Dog parks are kind of like daycares in that they're not all created equal, but traditionally in the US a dog park would be a fenced in field that may or may not have some dog, like, not necessarily agility equipment, but like that type of thing, like obstacles. But basically is typically a big field with maybe some picnic tables for people to sit at.
We have them here as well. But what I like about the American ones, and I know they're probably not all like this, but that you often have them where they segregate the big dogs and the small dogs,
yes,
which we don't, we are, as far as I'm aware in Australia, we don't have that. But yeah, we've got big dog parks as well. Yeah, don't you have them, Sarah?
No, I think we just go to the park whenever the park is, you know, and the park's open and off we go, and everybody lets the dogs just go off willy-nilly.
We have areas where you can go to the park, but your dog must, if it's allowed, must be on lead. And then we have the areas where your dog can be off lead. And
there's very, very, I think we're starting to get more now. And we're starting to get more, I think it's particularly because of dog walkers going out with multiple dogs into the areas where other people just go, you know, with Fluffy on a bit of string. And because of there's been lots of issues and insurance things and dogs out of control and stuff like that. So people are starting to get very twitchy about that. But for the most part, we just don't have that kind of dog park here in the UK because we've got so many national parks. And in our national parks, apart from the ones that maybe have livestock in, you know, dogs can just go free pretty much wherever. Yeah. If it's common land, then they're off, you know, they're off lead.
It varies here. A lot of the, like, national parks, your dog would have to be on a lead. But there are some states that are more free. I think a lot of the more rural places allow you to have dogs off lead more, but anyways,
it just brings me to mind of the Fenton video. Have you guys seen that?
Oh yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Have you seen it, Stacey?
Yes.
Oh, I might have to dig that out and link that in the show notes for anybody that hasn't seen it, because it is funny.
It is. Now that is a good one. Anyways, the point about the dog park was that I don't really think there's necessarily a guarantee that if your dog does well in a dog park that they would do well at daycare for a couple reasons. First, I do think dog parks are usually a bit bigger than the play areas for daycare, so it's easier for your dog to kind of disengage and like take natural breaks if they wanted to. Secondly, at the dog park, you're there with your dog. And so if your dog is feeling a little bit anxious about the new environment or all the dogs or anything like that, they have that kind of secure base thing with you being there, right?
Yeah.
So I do think though that if your dog doesn't do well at the dog park, then they probably won't do well at daycare. But I don't necessarily think it works the other way, that if they do well at the dog park, that they'll do well at daycare.
The thing, yeah, I agree maybe with a big daycare facility, but a home care facility,
that's a different beast.
Because obviously dog parks and daycare, the dogs are probably likely to be hyped up, overexcited and boisterous, but at a home facility, you know, it might be hopefully the moods are a bit calmer for them and they can cope with it better.
That's usually my first recommendation, is that people find a home-based daycare for their dog, because I think in general they're more flexible. Like a lot of the daycares around here, and I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but where I am, a lot of them have specific pickup and drop off hours, and your dog is just there for the whole day, or some of them do half days, but you can't just drop them off for a couple hours, or, you know, so you don't have a lot of flexibility with, gosh, I just want to run some errands, can I just drop off? Like, it's like the whole day, like you just, so, but I think a lot of the smaller ones have a more flexibility in that area. And then also it's, you know, usually the same people because it's home based. And I think that's helpful for a lot of dogs.
I still think though, the same thing applies for home based ones in terms of what experience do they have with dogs? What dogs are there? How secure their yard is as well? Because I've just heard a couple of not so good stories about home care. I'm trying to
get people not to. Ray of sunshine.
No, I just do your due diligence. That's all I'm saying, and make sure you're comfortable with the situation your dog's going to be left in, and the person looking after them has some kind of experience with dogs.
Yeah, and it would be nice if they also had that. I mean, one of the things that I've got on my list of questions was the make sure that they've got a first aid certificate, please. Because that can come in pretty useful. The other thing, I was just thinking about all these companies that do all these, you know, doggy daycare jobbies, that if any of you are out there listening to this, people with separation anxiety dogs could also do with some help, ideally on an evening and on a weekend. Because that's quite often when they find it difficult to get somebody to look after the dog. And sometimes, you know, when they want to have a little bit of life somewhere in the middle during training, you know, perhaps go out for a meal or go out to see friends or something, that would be an ideal time to get someone to look after your dog. But a lot of there's not very many places that do that, is there?
No, that's probably right. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just touching on your first aid certificate comment, Sarah. People can get pet dog or pet first aid certificates, so even more specific, because maybe not everything that you would do for a human in terms of first aid you would do slightly differently for a dog. Or if a dog needs resuscitating, it's really good if they know how to resuscitate a dog, how to do heart compression mouth to nose.
So that's what I meant, a dog first aid certificate, not a human one.
Okay.
I'm sure having a human one's probably a good idea, but no, I did mean a dog one. Yeah, there's a lot of them over here. It's quite a big thing. You get loads of them on Facebook. You know, every year there's the that a spate of first aid certificates. So I don't think, I suppose depending on where you are, but certainly in the UK, they're not hard to get.
I've done one, but I do need to refresh it because it was quite a few years ago now, so I've forgotten a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, and they're usually quite good fun as well, especially when you get the dummy dogs to play with.
Yeah.
And putting bandages on things and stuff, you know, it's always, they're always interesting.
I think the thing with doggy daycares is you're paying them to do a service, so you have every right to interview them. As you would with anything else, like, you know, ask lots of questions, ask them as you said, Stacey, because I it was a good way of putting it, not my dog has separation anxiety, what would you do or how do you deal with it, but more what do you do with dogs with separation anxiety, so they're not talking, they're not going to tell you what you want to hear.
So I guess, like, just in wrapping up is to ask a lot of open-ended questions, not only separation anxiety related ones, but just general training type of questions, how they're grouped, what the environment is like, those types of questions. But then also questions about their hours and when you can drop off and pick up your dog, and do those suit your needs? And then also if they have a kind of onboarding process, I think is another good one, because, you know, just thinking for many dogs, not only the hyper attached dogs, but especially the hyper attached dogs, you don't want to go from zero to a full day of daycare, right? Even if that's the only thing that facility offers. So what are the steps that they can kind of allow or accommodate to help your dog get used to it?
And the pickup process itself as well, you know, you want to know about their pickup process. Is it one of these where they pick up 10 or 15 dogs on a morning? You know, if your dog is the first dog that they pick up, then your dog could end up being in the back of a van for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour while they pick all the rest of the dogs up.
Do most of your daycares pick up?
It's dependent, isn't it? It seems some do, some don't.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's another question to ask too. Yeah. And depending on how well your dog does in a car, you know, you might want one that you can just drop your dog off at. Mm-hmm. Or the pickup might be useful for you. Ness, do you have any last minute words of caution?
any more feel good stories from
Oh, sorry. I will say something. Look, I'll say something positive. Ready?
Yeah.
So I think daycare can be a really great place for your dog, especially if they've got separation anxiety and they love going to daycare. And there are some awesome daycare centres out there, some really good ones. And I know one of my clients takes her dog regularly there, and her dog has the best time ever. And when it comes home, she's totally exhausted. And it's actually the most perfect time for her to do some training, because the dog's nice and relaxed and in a really good mental state. So I guess my take home message would be just do your due diligence and make sure that it's a good daycare that suits your dog.
Okay, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you all for listening to Tales from the Doghouse. I am Stacey Bell from Focused Fun. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Focused Fun Dogs, and my website is focusedfun.net. Thanks for listening.
And thanks for listening to me too, Sarah McLaren from the UK, Separation Anxiety Solutions. And you can find me on the Facebook and the internet. Instagram out loud, and you can, if you want to contact me at any point, you can email me at hello@separationanxietysolutions.com.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And just a quick reminder, next Thursday in Australia, which is probably Wednesday for many people over in the UK and the US, I do have my Separation Anxiety Door Desensitization Workshop coming up. If you want to do that, please reach out at Ness, N-E-S-S, at roughdiamonds.net. That's R-U-F-F diamonds with an S, .net, or just message my Facebook page, Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Stitcher, Google, Spotify, and lots of other listening apps. Please like, share, review, give us a 5-star review, and share us with your friends so they also can find us if they have a dog with separation anxiety. Until next week, see ya.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.